All right, 24 minutes in front of the hour. Going to be a short week for us here on the Big Talker FM, as I hope it is for you as well, as you get to enjoy a few days off, hopefully. And if you're one of those great small businesses out there, we continue to encourage consumers and spenders this weekend to support local, buy local, and support those small businesses that keep our economy rocking and rolling. Got a little bit more money in your pocket this year. Easy to go click on a mouse to purchase through one of the retail giants. But why not support local? We've got so many great local partners with us here at the Big Talker FM. From Wage Jewelers, Cape Fear Spice Merchants, our friends at Wilmington Aqua Float and Cryo. The list goes on and on and on. Yaya Lasowski from the Consumer Choice Center. He loves choices. That's what they do for a living, pointing out, the deficiencies we see or the push by some within our political establishment to take away the freedoms and choices that we enjoy here in this country. Their fight is global, consumerchoicecenter.org. Yael, it's great to have you on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Great to talk to you and great to be back in the Old North State in North Carolina.
Yeah, I know that you are home for Thanksgiving in the Charlotte area, so hopefully you... And tell me, in the Asowski household, what is a typical Thanksgiving, since you are, you know, well-versed geographically, globally? Is it a traditional type of an American Thanksgiving at the Asowski household? Give me the lowdown.
Well, you have our Canadian Thanksgiving is usually the second Tuesday in October. We're from the French side, so it's L'Action de Grâce. So we tend to have something there, but then for the normal Thanksgiving, we get all the family around. We have cousins and uncles and everyone in the area. We just get our big turkey and enjoy a nice day, a couple bottles of wine with the family. There's no football or anything, but we try to watch some highlight reels of some great NASCAR races. So that's the Osaski Thanksgiving for you.
No doubt. That's my kind of party. Yael is with us from the Consumer Choice Center once again, the purveyors of choice globally around the world and here in this country as well. Yael, since you're so well-versed, particularly in Europe and in that surrounding area, of course, in the news over the last few weeks, we are learning more and more about the country of Ukraine. Can you give us a little perspective on the history, the background of Ukraine, the history of corruption there, why we should even care about this country as Americans who, well, give hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to that foreign country along with many others around the world? Can you just give us a little, you know, just give us a little groundwork here on the country of Ukraine and why it is or isn't important to the lives of everyday Americans?
Yeah, sure. So Ukraine was itself a territory, part of the Soviet Union for many years. It is a country in which half the population speaks Russian and half speaks Ukrainian. So the Ukrainians are mostly in the West, and for many years before the Soviet Union, Ukraine was actually a part of the Austrian Empire, so very close to my home in Vienna, and it was a kind of flourishing part of civilization, at least the Western part for a long time. But once the Iron Curtain came down, Ukraine was forced to kind of be in this entire Russia model of the Soviet Union, and there was a lot of this collectivization amongst farmers. And that actually led to very, very devastating losses of life in Ukraine. The Soviet government was incredibly punitive because Ukraine is a breadbasket. There's a lot of farming, and it was the grain supplier for the entire Soviet Union. So what the Soviet masters would do under this model of communist dictatorship is they actually collectivized all the agriculture, they took all the farms, they nationalized everything, and the Ukrainian farmers were forced to make the grain and all the products for the rest of the Soviet Union. So you actually had a huge famine in Ukraine because of that, because the Soviet authorities and bureaucrats destined all the food and exports not to go to Ukrainians, but to go to the rest of the Soviet Union. So there is a lot of millions of deaths related to this. It's kind of a terrible tragedy. That continued on It was subjugated under the Soviet Union really until fall of the Berlin Wall and really until the Soviet Union collapsed in 1989, 1990, around then. And really, it's been trying to rebound. I guess in the last 6 years, what's most important for your listeners to know is that in Ukraine, you've had this movement of young people who are very attached to the European Union, who want to be a part of the European Union. And then you have the more Eastern bloc that is very loyal to the idea of Soviet Russia, to Russia itself. So that's why you had this Maidan protest in 2014. You had spontaneous uprisings throughout the country. And then you have the ceding of territory to Russia. That happened with not just the invasion of Crimea, which is right there on the Black Sea, but then the Donbass and other areas in eastern Ukraine that were just completely obliterated, taken over. And if you even look on Google Maps today, parts of it are today Russia. So that's kind of the background. That's what was happening. You've had some reformists who've been elected who want to go in there and change things up. And some of them try to be successful. The other problem with Ukraine, it used to be the breadbasket. Today, it's kind of the epicenter for a lot of energy, specifically a lot of oil and natural gas to get to Europe. The Europeans are very reliant today on Russian gas, Russian natural gas that comes through. And Ukraine was seen as a way that they could kind of bypass that. So there's a lot of issues there. And then when it comes to the corruption, no doubt kleptocrats ruled the day in the Soviet Union, much like they did in Ukraine after the Soviet Union dissolved. And there's a lot of people who made billions of dollars, kind of having a monopoly on resources and the like. And really what led us to the last 2 years of consuming the American electorate and the American media establishment has been the move of a couple of reformers in Ukraine to roust bad prosecutors. And really, Ukraine, unfortunately, is still mired in war. There are still young guys who are my age who are on the front lines. There are still people losing their lives. And all this is happening while there's billions of dollars just being taken out of the economy. So there is a lot of stuff to worry about. It's definitely something that I think a Western country like the United States should be concerned about. And I think that's why we're having all this fallout, specifically around the impeachment hearings of President Trump.
Yael Lisowski with us here, giving us perspective, once again, that you rarely hear anywhere else, at least an in-depth background as far as how did we get here and where are we going. And I guess, Yael, if you were to put the cap of commander-in-chief on, what are some of the things that the American government should be doing, is doing, or failing to do in order to support Ukraine in a way in which, we continue, of course, you want to ruffle the feathers of the Russians. We've got this election meddling that people are talking about from Russia and other sources saying Ukraine, some of the diplomats disagree with that. What are we doing as an American government to get our hands wrapped around that complex situation that you just laid out there for us?
Well, in the Obama administration, there were talks of supporting a lot of the Ukrainian demonstrators and sort of the defense movements against the Russian incursion. You didn't really have that. People talked about it a lot, and there were instances in which some aid went to various military militias. A lot of them were pretty unsavory, so your listeners can do a lot of research there, and really then didn't get much official support. The United States did not give that to Ukraine, unfortunately. So I think what you would do is if you had, let's say if we had President Catanacci there, what I would advise him to do is to pressure the EU to continue helping Ukraine. I mean, younger Ukrainians, of which I know many, they're excited about a European future, being able to work and travel and exchange with the European countries. They're very similar culturally. They want to have that relationship, but they've been held back because of this relationship with Russia and the reliance on gas. So we really need to push the EU to accept them. I don't know what that means in terms of accession if you allow the Ukraine to enter the European Union, but you need to bring it into the country of partners. You know, this is a country that you can put into NATO and you can have a good amount of allied relationships with. I think just a lot of people have been very, very wary of doing so. But the young people are on board. That's why the young people were out in the streets demonstrating, starting 5 years ago. They're going to continue to do that. It's not just about military weapons. I think it has to be a lot about cultural openness and diplomatic channels. And we have to open that up and just give people the hope that they can join, you know, Western liberal democracies that do provide people much more freedom, give them much more ability to make their lives better, to improve their lives, and they actually have a semblance of what it means to be free. Well, I think that's what I would definitely suggest President Catanacci to do.
And with that said, isn't it, we had this conversation about an hour ago, inherent in just human nature, you get a little taste of freedom and opportunity, particularly among young people, and they want more of it, not less of it, particularly if they grew up under the thumb, maybe, of a Soviet type of regime in the Russians, Ukraine, for example. There are many instances and other examples that we can lay out there, Hong Kong being one of them as well, where we've got youth movements all over the world where they get a little taste of westernized culture, freedom, liberty, and choice, and they want more of it, not less.
Yeah, and the battle right now is against autocratic regimes. So the people of, let's say, China and Russia and different parts of Ukraine, they do want their freedom, and they're great. And in many instances, when they're able to, without violence, they're fighting for that. The problem is that many of these regimes in these countries are very autocratic, they're dictatorial, they're totalitarian, and it's a different type of system. But people know, thanks to free trade, thanks to exchange, thanks to the internet, that people are free throughout the globe, and they're fighting for that. And that's what Hong Kong is about. That's why people are going out in droves every single week to try to fight for their freedom and make sure that the Communist Party of China does not rule Hong Kong. Hong Kong is an exemplar of great benefits that come from opening your markets, opening trade. I mean, it has been a huge success story. And I think the more that we allow China to get involved in this, it's going to be very bad. So that's why we focus on that a lot at the Consumer Choice Center. We're launching a new project to actually focus on that because we think that democratic regimes do win out at the end of the day. That's how you guarantee people's liberties much more. And we need to continue to fight against authoritarian countries. It doesn't just stop at the NBA. It's not just street protests. You know, these are entire structural changes that need to be made so that people in other countries can enjoy the same that we have in liberal democracies around the world.
The Global Grassroots Movement for Consumer Choice, the Consumer Choice Center. You can find out more about what they do, stories that are going to pique your interest surrounding choice, freedom, and liberty, consumerchoicecenter.org, consumerchoicecenter.org.